Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hey everyone, and thank you for listening to the Liverbird Sailing Podcast. I appreciate you tuning in every week. As usual, an extra special thank you to everyone who is supporting the show on Patreon. If you like the show and find it provides value and want to help keep it going, check out the Patreon link in the description. Here's what's coming up next on the Liverbird Sailing Podcast.
We don't want to get to the end of our lives and be sitting in our rockers on our porch and say, I wish I had. I'm eternally grateful that we had the opportunity to be able to retire when we did onto the sailboat and for those 5 years that we spent cruising. I just am so, so grateful that we did that and that we had the opportunity and the means to do it. And that we didn't wait. I mean, we weren't really ready.
Welcome to the podcast. I am your host, Annika. On the Liverbird Sailing Podcast, I chat with awesome people who live, work, and travel on their sailboats. My guests share inspiring stories and real-life advice about the lifestyle so that you and I can be better prepared for our sailing adventures. Today, we are talking about chasing the travel dream after retirement. My guest is Deb Akey, who learned to sail in her 50s and together with her husband bought a sailboat and went cruising for 5 years. We cover topics like the challenges involved in managing a rental apartment, going from lake sailors to ocean sailors, and some realizations and learnings she had about offshore sailing on a two-person crew. Deb also shares some great advice for anyone considering this lifestyle, especially for those thinking of leaving after retirement. Now here is my chat with Deb. At what point in your lives did the sailing dream start to develop for you and your husband?
I was 51 at the time and my husband was 52. We're just about a year apart. And the driving force behind it was a way to retire early. We wanted to retire while we still had bodily strength to do something fun. And so in the process of trying to find some way that we could retire early that we could afford, the boating lifestyle came up in my Google research. And so we started to look at that possibility. And we had no prior boating or sailing experience whatsoever at that point.
And was the liveaboard sailing concept, the idea of people living on their boats instead of in a house, was that already a familiar concept? Or did you discover this at some point as you started to look into all this?
We discovered it as we looked into it. It was completely foreign to us. We had no idea that anybody did this. Every vacation we ever took, we always went to water somewhere, either a lake or the ocean. We've always both loved the ocean. And so doing something on the water was a really natural step for us just because we love it so much. But the lifestyle was completely foreign. And so we spent a lot of time in our spare time looking on Yacht World and reading different blogs, different people's stories. And that's how we became familiar with it. But we also realized at that point how far we had to go in order to get to be able to realize that dream. So we started looking for classes to take. And so that's how we started out. We looked up those classes and then began to take those lessons.
Yeah, that's wonderful that you've discovered that as well. Obviously, that comes shortly after, like, yes, the sailing would be great. It's like, wait, I don't know how to sail. So always need to get that experience in first. So you went in and then you did your courses and started to move this dream and plan a little bit further along what you called your retirement project, which I love. So when your plan developed from just an idea or a dream to a little bit something more real, I would love to hear, what was your family's reaction to this? Were they on board? Were they a little scared or, oh gosh, what are mom and dad going to be doing now? Or what was their take on that?
Well, it took some time for them to even realize what was happening, because my husband and I are both in aviation and we're both pilots. And as a result, everything that we do is probably overthought and overplanned. And so, you know, we started with our ASA 101 class on the lake, and then we took our 103 and 104 on the lake. And then after that, we thought, well, yeah, this is something we probably think we want to really do. And so we maybe ought to buy a practice boat. And so we ended up buying a Compact 27 right there on the lake that somebody owned and was selling, and began to learn not just how to sail, but how to manage life on a boat. We learned a lot about systems maintenance, which is ultra critical. If you want to live this lifestyle, you either have to be independently wealthy or you have to know how to do the work yourself. And it wasn't until we had had that boat for some time, I think, that our family began to realize that this was something we were serious about. Because until that point, it was, yeah, we're taking some classes, we're learning how to sail, we're going and having fun on the lake on the weekends. But once we began to actually spend substantial amount of time on that boat, learning how to live on it, that's when they became aware of it. They were very supportive. I have three daughters. My middle daughter came out to the lake to sail with us one day. And after we were done sailing, my husband said, well, what do you think? And she looked off in the distance and she looked back at him and she kind of smiled and she said, I think it's a lot of work. And so that was her only comment. But then my oldest daughter and her husband, who at that point only had one child, came to visit us on that boat, on that Compact 27. And my son-in-law, who's an artist, went down in the boat. He turned around, looked at all the space. He sat down on the settee, stretched out, and said, this is all the space a man needs. And that was the beginning of their sailing adventure, which, so it's definitely in the family. They're very supportive.
Oh, that's wonderful. You've just inspired generations literally by going out and doing this for yourself. So that's fantastic. And well, obviously, so learning to sail on that smaller boat was an important step in the longer journey. And at what point did you then buy the bigger boat? And
how long did you have the smaller boat before you decided, like, okay, we need a real boat that can go a little further than the lake?
We bought the practice boat we bought in 2008, in the beginning of 2008. And we had it all the way through the middle of 2011. In the spring of 2011, we started spending a lot more time on Yacht World and all of the boat sale sites. And then we took a train trip up to Chicago for the Chicago Boat Show in January of 2011. And we went around and looked at a bunch of boats there, and they actually had some of the newer boats there for sale. And they had offered this this lease to buy, like you buy it, you put it in charter, and that helps you to pay for it. And we looked at that, but it would have taken 5 years of the boat being in charter before it would have been paid off and before we could leave. And we didn't want to wait 5 years. And so we kind of nixed on that idea. It's a valid idea for some people in some situations. If we had started earlier, it might have been a better option for us. And it does have difficulties with it because you're getting a boat that somebody else has spent a lot of time using. And so it might not be in as good a shape as you had hoped by the time you take full possession of it. But it just didn't work for us. And so while we were there that night in the hotel, I was looking at Yacht World, and I noticed this boat that was local in Chicago, and the broker was at the boat show. And so the next day we went back to the boat show and got in touch with the broker and made arrangements to come and see the boat the weekend after that. And so so we took the train back up the following weekend and saw the boat and decided to get it. So because of winter in Chicago being what it is, we didn't end up actually closing on the boat until the end of March, and then we didn't end up moving it until, I believe it was May. It was either May or June before we finally moved it. And what we did is we trucked it down to the lake where we currently had our Compact 27 and put it on the lake so that we could spend the next year, you know, learning how to live on that boat and getting it up to snuff because there were a lot of projects that needed done on it. So that would have been early that summer. And then we sold the Compact 27 in the middle of that summer, and then continued on the Tartan. It was a Tartan 42. And we continued then to stay on that Tartan 42 because of many issues with that boat. We ended up not leaving until September of 2013, and we trucked it out to Annapolis, which is where we started our cruising time, was from Annapolis. We had originally hoped to go north and go out the Great Lakes and down the East Coast, but because of the delay, we couldn't do that because it would have been too cold and the storms would have already started on Lake Michigan. So we had it a year and a half, let's say, before we actually left.
So, okay, so you've done your sail training, you now have a boat as well, it's all ready to go, but we kind of skipped over the one other important preparation step, which is, of course, what did you do with everything else? You know, you had a house that you had lived in and all this kind of non-boat related preparation. Obviously, you know, step one must have been to actually quit your jobs, or maybe that was step three. I don't know. What was that preparation like?
Well, I actually quit my job in 2011 and then began to do just a contract cleaning job for that next year and a half so that I had a little bit more free time. My husband didn't leave his job until June of 2013. And we decided, because the market was so terrible at that point, we decided to rent our condo in St. Louis rather than sell it. And we got a 2-year rental contract with some tenants and then rented that for that first 2 years. And then in 2015, we took a summer break off the boat during hurricane season. We put the boat on the hard and came back and sold the condo.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, well, that's a really good strategy too, because then that way you have a bit of a safe place to go back to without being entirely out of anything. But then it sounds like the second half of your cruising, that was it. You just had your 40-foot tartan and that's it.
We sold everything when we bought the boat. I mean, we got rid of everything. We completely cleaned out the house and left only a few bits of furniture that the tenants wanted in there. So we were all in. I mean, there's no question we were all in. We never intended to come back to the house. It was just a financial strategy to you know, get us through until the market. We were hoping the market would pick back up. As it turned out, it really didn't. And we kind of took a beating on the condo, but we didn't want to try to find new tenants. Renting is difficult. It's a good strategy for some people, but if you're going to rent your house to keep it, you know, like let's say you only want to cruise for, you know, 5 years or even 10 years, whatever, or even a year, if you want to cruise and you want to rent your house so that you have it to come back to, it's really a good idea to secure the services of some rental agent who can keep a very close eye on your property, because being far away is not the ideal.
No, exactly. And you can't have, like you said, you can't have a little bit of oversight. You don't know what's going on there. But also if the renter needs something from you and you're, you know, somewhere in the Caribbean, that's not going to really work out.
Exactly. It is a good strategy for a lot of people, you know, and we know quite a few people that do it, but it drove me crazy. It was a constant source of stress for me, and getting rid of it was the best thing that we ever did. For us, it was also, it was a financial strategy, because we left, we did not have sufficient cash to carry us through 5 years of cruising when we left. And we knew we didn't. And we thought about, well, do we hang around and keep saving until we have enough? Or do we just go and figure out how to make it work along the way? And we knew quite a few people who were cruising. And then during the hurricane season, they would park somewhere and work. And it seemed to make it possible for them. And that's pretty much where we ended up. We kind of thought that's what we would do. And so, you know, we left, we cruised for the first 3 years on the cash we had, including the money that we made selling the house. So we had that cash, and we had the cash in savings that we started out with. And then in 2017, we stopped for hurricane season, and my husband worked in a boatyard for that season, and I did projects on our boat. And then we did the same thing in 2018. Again, we went back to the same boatyard, and he worked and I worked on the boat. So, people want to know how much it costs to go cruising. It's going to take whatever you have. If you're rich, you're going to cruise differently. You're going to spend more time on docks. You're going to spend more money motoring because you'll have fuel money. If you're trying to do it on a budget, you're going to spend much more time at anchor, which was us. We spent almost all the time either on anchor or a mooring ball. We hardly ever went to a dock. And so you have to understand before you go, What is my lifestyle like? What do I want? It's not going to be that much different on the boat than on land. If you spend a lot of money eating out on land, you're going to want to spend a lot of money eating out on the boat. Just because you're on a boat doesn't mean you're going to change those core desires. So if you want to cruise, you have to spend some time really analyzing who you are and what your expectations are of cruising before you decide whether it's something you really want to do.
Yeah, that's really good advice as well. And did you have a fairly high level of confidence after having that small boat that you would like the lifestyle? Or were you still kind of like, well, we'll see?
No, there was no question in my mind whatsoever. We absolutely loved the time we spent on the boat. We were wholly unprepared, however, being lake sailors, for the difference between being lake sailors and being ocean sailors. We did, before we bought the boat, we did three different courses to try to prepare, not the ASA courses. These were separate things that we did. We took, one was an ASA course. It was ASA 114 on a catamaran, because at that point we didn't know if we wanted to do a catamaran or a monohull. And so we took that class, and we loved it, and we loved the boat that we were on, but we realized immediately that we were never going to be able to afford one. And so that took that out of the equation. We took a class on a Pearson 35 from New Jersey up around Block Island through the Long Island Sound, down through New York, around Sandy Point, and back to New Jersey. It was a disaster because the boat was in terrible shape and the captain was completely not up to the task. But we learned a ton about what we wanted and what we didn't want through that trip. And then we took a third trip with John Kretschmer, who is a teaching voyager, and it was the best money we ever spent. And we spent a week going across the Gulf Stream to the Bahamas and going around some islands in the Bahamas and then coming back. And at that point, we discovered that we really loved the open ocean. What we failed to consider is that we loved the open ocean because we were on a 47-foot boat with a crew of six people. When we got out on the open ocean in a 42-foot boat with two people, we discovered we didn't like it so much, because now on overnights you're single-handing in opposite shifts and you don't get to see each other and you're tired all the time. It's just a completely different experience. So we discovered that we were coastal sailors and we liked to go and be at anchor every night, and it completely changed the way that we began to cruise at that point. So that's another thing to think about, you know, as you start to prepare and decide what kind of cruiser are you. Are you one who's going to cross the Pacific Ocean, or are you going to do what we do and coastal cruise and in the ICW and back and forth to the Bahamas? And
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If. Only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us. mintmobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 5/31/24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
You know, we went up and down the East Coast and around Florida and through the Gulf of Mexico and back and forth to the Bahamas several times. And we were completely content with that lifestyle.
Yeah, I mean, there's always a lot to explore, even in your own country. Like, you don't necessarily have to go to the far-flung places if you're just somewhere new in your own country, especially in the USA when you have so much coastline, a lot of it also in warm waters once you get further south. So no wonder. So you started off in the Chesapeake Bay area and then made your way down for, or did you go kind of back and forth over the years?
We went from the Chesapeake, from Annapolis, down the ICW to Florida, across to the Bahamas and back. And we did that back and forth three times, from Annapolis back and forth three times. And then we went around to the west coast of Florida the couple years that, because we were working in a boatyard in Palmetto, the Bradenton area in Florida. And so we went around to the West Coast and did some of the Gulf Coast of Florida. The farthest that we ever went was Eleuthera, as far as the Bahamas. We never went any farther south.
Well, I was going to ask then, having explored the coastline very extensively, as well as the Bahamas, do you have any favorite places that you really look back to with fond memories?
The Abacos. Absolutely, positively our favorite place is the Abacos.
Yeah, no wonder.
Especially Green Turtle. Green Turtle is our favorite place, bar none.
Yeah, I bet. Yeah, it looks fantastic. And everybody I've talked to who's been to the Bahamas says the same thing, that they are just exactly every bit as good as what everybody says. So,
yeah, we were so happy that we got to be there before Dorian because, you know, the Bahamas will be decades before, I mean, the Abacos will be decades before they're ever back to what they were when we had the opportunity to see them.
Yeah, for sure. They've changed a lot, for sure. And so you did your sailing adventure as planned for 5 or so years, going back and forth and doing a little bit of work along the way. And now, after all these years on the water, what were some of the reasons that you decided to return back to land for a little bit anyway?
Well, we originally had a plan to do a charter company on our sailboat. And we both got our captain's licenses with that in mind. But unfortunately, it was going to take us the better part of a full year to get that up and running enough to be able to support us. And we were down in our cash to the point where he was either going to have to go back to work at the boatyard another season, or we were going to have to stop and find a full-time job, because we didn't have enough cash to get us through that point. And then our eldest daughter and her family wanted to cruise with us for a little while, and we had enough money to go and cruise with them for about 6 or 8 months. And so we just decided that's what we were going to do. And then at the end of that time period, he got a job offer in St. Louis that was one that he couldn't turn down, and it was close to the rest of our family. So, you know, that's why we came back. And at that point, we knew we were going to need to make a transition to a trawler, because the boat that we had, the Tartan 42, is a bit of a thoroughbred. She's a really, really excellent sailing boat, but she requires a good bit of physical stamina to operate, and we were getting on in age to the point where we were beginning to realize we were going to need to make that transition. And so it didn't make any sense to keep the sailboat on the hard with all the expenses that entails, and to have her wasting away as well while we made enough money to go back out. So we put her up for sale and sold her in 2019. And then last year, we purchased our new trawler, not new, new to us, trawler. And we're getting ready to go back out on that for a while, but we're not going to do the full-time cruising any longer. She's currently berthed in Oriental North Carolina, and we're going to move her. We're going to do the northern part of the Great Loop and move her down here to the St. Louis area, where we'll use her for weekends and long trips in the river system.
Yeah, well, that is interesting. So you had this time on the water, then you kind of unintentionally took a pandemic break, as it turned out to come upon us. And now we're getting somewhat over it. You're heading back out there on a different kind of vessel. What is it that keeps you wanting to go back for more? Like, you did, you know, 5 years of exploring, but now you're like, no, still need a little more.
You said it in your email to me. It's the wanderlust. I mean, my husband and I, we've known each other over 50 years. We kind of grew up together. We were teenagers when we met. And both of us have always had a bad case of wanderlust, and we've spent a ton of time on motorcycle trips and flying and just exploring everywhere. And the boat was just another extension of that. And I like, on the sailing aspect, the things that really mean a lot to me are being out in nature, first of all, because when you're out on the water, nature rules. Mother Nature always rules. You don't do anything without her permission. And so being out in nature like that, the independence, the self-sufficiency, the aspect of the low carbon footprint, although it's not quite as good on this boat as it was on the sailboat. But all of those things are the things that we enjoy. And we don't want to get to the end of our lives and be sitting in our rockers on our porch and say, I wish I had. I'm eternally grateful that we had the opportunity to be able to retire when we did onto the sailboat, and for those 5 years that we spent cruising. I just am so, so grateful that we did that and that we had the opportunity and the means to do it. And that we didn't wait. I mean, we weren't really ready. There's no question. We didn't have enough money. You never have enough money, but we didn't have enough money. The boat was not ready. And, you know, the boat that we bought was the wrong boat for us. And it was not as represented. And that's why we wrote the book, How Not to Buy a Cruising Boat, because it was a disaster. But nonetheless, that 5 years is probably the most meaningful time in my life as an adult. I mean, it just, the people that we met, the things that we saw, the places that we went, and the new cultures that we experienced are just absolutely invaluable.
Yeah. Well, you said that your boat selection was a bit of a disaster. So why was that? Was it just because you discovered later on that ocean sailing is not really your thing and you don't need an ocean sailor, or was there more to it?
It was a combination of several things. Yes, it was a blue water boat, and everybody kept telling us you have to have a blue water boat. You have to have a boat that has a certain style of companionway that this one had. Instead of opening on both the top and the front, this companionway was just a single slider that slid back on the top. And the reason for that is because it doesn't down flood the boat. If you take water in the cockpit, it doesn't flow down in and sink your boat. Great idea if you're going to sail around the world. And, you know, there are just so many aspects in that boat that made it not a good coastal cruiser. It was a super sailing boat. Great for, you know, 3-4 weeks on the ocean going across the Pacific, but not very good for coastal cruising. And the other reason is that it was badly, badly misrepresented in the ads. And because we had no experience with boats, we got taken for a ride. And we were coming out of the aviation environment where everything is super regulated and parts and maintenance are done to a certain standard. And to be introduced to the marine industry where none of that applies was a real shock to us. And we expected if we hired surveyors to survey the boat, of which we hired 3 different surveyors when we bought that boat, we expected them to be honest and forthright and to let us know what was wrong with the boat. And none of that happened. And as a result, we ended up spending tens of thousands of dollars after we bought the boat repairing things that supposedly worked when we bought the boat. So there were just a lot of issues, and it's way too in depth for this podcast, and that's why we wrote the book. It's out there if anybody wants to go deeper into that before you buy a boat. It's a great resource, but it's something that you really have to be careful of if you have no prior experience, is that you do your homework and you get people that you trust.
Yeah, and I will link to that book so anybody can go check that out. I'm curious though, now that you had the sailboat experience, that did that help you to buy a trawler, or is that again a different ballgame?
No, the purchasing of the boat principles are still the same. There's different equipment. Obviously, you're much more concerned with the power plant issues. And you don't have to worry about sails or rigging, running rigging or standing rigging or anything like that. But the rest of the boat, you know, all of the rest of the boat, the safety aspects and the hull and you know, the running gear, the prop and so forth, all those still are the same. So what we learned buying our boat definitely helped us. And we ended up with a really terrific boat. I mean, it's a wonderful boat and I'm very excited to get going on it.
I bet. And you had some good plans for it as well. And this sort of 6 months on, 6 months off seasonality is quite interesting as well, because, you know, maybe you get a little bit bored of the sailing or tired of it. And then, okay, let's go on land for a little bit. And then you get, you know, a little bit tired of the land life and you get to go out and explore again. So I think that's a really fascinating balance. Like, I mean, I would always want that for myself. Given that, you know, I haven't talked to a lot of people who have started after retirement. A lot of my previous guests have been, you know, 20, 30, 40 somethings who've, you know, changed their life differently. So I was really curious to talk to you and learn from you. And I'm wondering, would you have any advice or words of inspiration to share to anyone who is, you know, say over 50 years old and is thinking about their own retirement project?
I guess my first reaction to that is don't wait. But that comes with a caveat, because you don't want to just jump in completely unprepared, because that can lead to a real disaster. I mean, sailing is not easy. It's not an easy lifestyle. And there's so many things about it. You know, you've either got to carry your water or you've got to make it if you have a water maker. And I would never own another boat without a water maker after cruising for that amount of time on our sailboat. You have to deal with your sewage. When you go to the grocery store, it's an all-day thing, because you have to, in most locations, walk to the store maybe a mile and a half. You've got to either carry that back or you've got to have carts to wheel it back. You've got to get it in the dinghy. You've got to get the dinghy to the boat. You got to get the groceries on the boat. Then you have to get them all stowed. There's just so many things that you take for granted when you're on land. And, you know, you go to the bathroom, you flush the toilet, and that's it. You never have to think about it after that. You know, you throw a load of laundry in and you might put it in the dryer. You might not till the afternoon. When you do laundry on a boat, it's an all day occurrence. You have to load it into the dinghy. You have to go to the laundromat. A lot of times you have to walk there, or you got to take an Uber, you know, bring it back, get it in the dinghy, get it on the boat. It's a lot of work. And if you're not self-sufficient and if you're not mechanically inclined, it's probably not a really terrific lifestyle. Like I said, unless you're independently wealthy, even then it can be difficult, because if you break down and you're not near somewhere that can help you, you know, if you're not self-sufficient and not mechanically inclined, how are you even going to get there? So yes, don't wait, because so many times we would hear about people that were dreaming of the lifestyle and had a quote-unquote five-year plan, which ours took six, not five, but they had their five-year plan. And a year before they were ready to leave, one of the two of them had a heart attack, or one of the two of them, you know, got cancer or whatever. And so, you know, if you wait, you run the risk of something like that happening, but you still need to be prepared. You need to learn. If you have no prior sailing experience, at a minimum, take the ASA 101 through 105 classes. You know, do some, I, a lot of people say they charter for experience. I don't particularly care for charters because they're so expensive. You can take classes out there that are just one-on-one with the captain of the boat that cost less than charters. And so that way you're getting more bang for your buck. There's a lot of different ways to prepare. Read everything you can get your hands on. Talk to everyone you can talk to. Walk the docks anywhere you go and just try to talk to other cruisers, other liveaboards, people doing it all the time. And just try to get as much experience as you can and as much knowledge as you can. And then be prepared to make a lot of mistakes. The other thing that I would have to mention is be sure that your relationship with whomever you're going with is rock solid, because cruising is a real test of those relationships. You're with each other 24/7. You're with each other in very stressful situations. You also are in a position where one of the two of you has to be, even if you're co-captains, one of the two of you has to be ultimately responsible. And sometimes that can cause some difficulties if the captain is a little too aggressive in their authoritarian manner. It can cause some problems in relationships. Some people feel like if they go cruising, it will solve their problems. It won't. It'll magnify them. It won't solve them. If you're an alcoholic on land, you're going to be a worse alcoholic on the boat. If you are not getting along on land, you definitely will not get along on the boat. So that's just something else to really consider. Most, I think, couples that are retirement age are probably pretty secure in their relationships. For us, we're best friends first, husband and wife second. We genuinely enjoy spending time with each other. We like each other. And so it worked for us really, really well. It was a really good time for us. And have a sense of humor. Be willing to laugh at yourself, because you're going to make a lot of really dumb mistakes. So you gotta be willing to laugh.
Oh, I love that. Yeah, that's really good advice. Thank you for sharing that. And I love that last piece of advice. Like, yeah, just be ready to have a little giggle at yourself when things go sideways, which they will.
They will absolutely go sideways. If it can happen, it will on a boat.
Well, there's a motto. Wonderful, Deb. Thank you so much for sharing your experience and your perspective on the sailing life.
It was my pleasure.
I hope you enjoyed this week's episode. Next week, it's time for a different story, and it will be about exploring the Caribbean. In the meantime, you can come say hi on Instagram or Facebook, where you can find me as the Liveaboard Sailing Podcast. And of course, I would be delighted to have you join Patreon, where I share some extra content and updates along the way. You can learn more at patreon.com/Liveaboard Sailing Podcast. And bye for now.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.